So we think you're going to be interested in this little law school seminar segment here coming up on the program. An obscure law in the books in the United States, the evolution of international law in the domain of human rights, and the technology of evidence gathering in cases of industrial collusion with corrupt international regimes. They're all colliding in a potentially landmark case before the U.S. Supreme Court today. Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Petroleum goes before the Supreme Court. Now, neither the plaintiff in this case nor the corporate defendant are American. The plaintiff is Nigerian. Royal Dutch Shell, of course, is a corporation that works in the United States but is not based in the United States. Yet the case is being argued before the highest court in the U.S. At issue, in part, is something called the Alien Tort Statute. Joining us now are Kenji Yoshino, Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor of Constitutional Law at New York University's School of Law. Kenji, always great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Maria LaHood, Senior Staff Attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, and she argued a similar case. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Maria, how would you characterize the legal issue here in the plaintiff's perspective?
Well, the question before the Supreme Court is essentially whether or not corporations can kill or torture or be complicit in killing or torturing, and whether they can be held accountable for those human rights violations.
And part of the issue of why this is being argued in the U.S. Supreme Court, even though the plaintiffs and the defendants aren't necessarily, strictly speaking, American, Kenji Yoshino, relates to this alien tort statute. Can you explain that? Because it goes way back in history.
Right. It goes way back to 1789, in fact, and it says that any civil action by an alien for a tort only committed in violation of the laws of nations, you know, can be brought into the United States federal district courts. And so this begs the question of what the law of nations is. And the law of nations is the customs and usages of civilized nations. So if that sounds spongy to you, it sounds spongy to me, too. And indeed, the courts themselves have said that it has a soft, indeterminate character.
And the plaintiffs have been inclined to view that as, well, that's obviously international law as it's developed over time, even though they didn't have a modern conception of international law back in the 1700s.
Exactly right. And I want to emphasize that I agree with you that it's very counterintuitive that you have what's the other side is calling the foreign cubed problem, which is you have a foreign plaintiff suing a foreign defendant for acts that occurred in foreign territory. And so it seems very odd on its face that this would be in a United States court. But I want to say that this ship sailed decades ago in 1980 with the Filatiga case, where an individual who was a Paraguayan was permitted under the Alien Tort Statute to sue a Paraguayan police officer for acts of torture committed in Paraguay. So ever since then, there's been a very long and unbroken line of decisions that have said that you are permitted to do this. So the foreign cube problem really isn't the problem. The only question here is whether or not the ability to sue a private individual, which has already been established, can be extended now to include private corporations.
Which raises the second issue. That's Kenji Yoshino of NYU. Maria LaHood, let's talk now about the specific facts at issue in this case. Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Shell Petroleum. Royal Dutch Shell in Nigeria, is that correct?
Yes.
Is obviously very close with the government in Nigeria. The plaintiff is alleging that Royal Dutch Shell somehow had something to do with human rights violations that manifested themselves on himself and his compatriots. Explain.
Well, yeah. Kiobel was filed in 2002, and it was brought by Ogoni in Nigeria in the Niger Delta against Royal Dutch Shell. It was also later brought against the Nigerian subsidiary for complicity with the military dictatorship in the 90s for detaining, torturing, and killing people in order to suppress the grassroots opposition movement to Shell's environmental degradation and human rights violations in the Ogoni region of the Niger Delta.
Maria, are the plaintiffs alleging that Royal Dutch Shell had its own sort of police force that conducted this sort of activity, or they are saying that simply their relationship with the Nigerian government meant that the Nigerian actions in the detentions come to bear some responsibility on the corporate actions here?
It was not only that they had a joint venture relationship with the Nigerian dictatorship, but also that they were doing things like cooperating with the Nigerian government and paying the Nigerian government and requesting things of the Nigerian government that led to the torture, detention, and killing of Ogoni.
Kenji Yoshino, how close will the Supreme Court want to establish a connection between actual human rights violations and individual corporate agents at Royal Dutch Shell? Or is it enough simply to have this joint venture economic relationship that goes back decades?
Yeah, it may be enough simply to have the joint venture relationship. I think what's really the core issue here, though, you know, for many people who are watching the court to draw this into my wheelhouse of constitutional law, is whether or not corporations, which the court seems to have favored over and over again, are going to be able to evade liability simply because they're corporations. So a couple of terms ago in the Citizens United case, we learned that corporations are persons for the purposes of the First Amendment. And so the optics of this case to the public are going to be very odd if the Supreme Court rules saying corporations have all the benefits of personhood, but they don't have any of the responsibilities of personhood.
So under Citizens United, the court seems to be saying that it's a free speech matter for corporations to pay unlimited amounts of money into political campaigns. That's a free speech issue. Yet the corporations are arguing, Maria, here, that because they're corporations, they should not be liable for things like murder and death.
Right. It really is outrageous. I mean, they want all the benefits and more of personhood, but none of the responsibility.
Now, that sounds, of course, to me, a layperson, like a complete contradiction in terms, but does anyone have any standing here to say, no, corporations are actually shielded from these sorts of lawsuits?
Yes, there is one way, and the way which is actually very important, which is that customary international law that I was referencing earlier actually is its own body of law that's distinct from domestic law like our Constitution. So technically, the court could say, well, corporations are persons for the purposes of constitutional law, but not for customary international law. Again, the question of how that's going to be messaged out to the country is a different matter entirely.
For people who watch human rights, Maria LaHood, how important is this case before we end this segment?
I think it's extremely important. And I would just point out that it's not only customary international law that the court is directed to look to, but general principles of law. And all countries hold corporations liable for civil actions. Like our own under federal common law. So this is critical because if this case holds that corporations can't be accountable, then they can, again, torture and kill at will and even keep profits from it.
Big case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Maria LaHood works for the Center for Constitutional Rights. Kenji Yoshino is a professor at NYU, Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor of Constitutional Law, to be precise, at New York University School of Law. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.